My name's Matt, I'm also one of the church leaders here. And I wanted, in the very short talk bit at the end that I've got here, and it will be short, I promise, I wanted us to have a look and see how much you know about Christmas TV adverts. Now, if you came to the Christmas party yesterday, we did this a bit yesterday, but I planned this before I even knew we were going to do that. So we're going to do it again. So if you came yesterday, you probably got a bit of a head start on some of them. If you watch TV, even a little bit over Christmas, it's just impossible to ignore the adverts, isn't it? It's mainly supermarkets, but it's other big stores as well who spend a massive amount of their advertising budget for the year, no doubt, trying to outdo each other as to who can put out the best Christmas ad. So I thought I'd test your knowledge of this year's Christmas ads. Sadly, we don't have time to watch them all. That would be really fun. So I've just got some slides. But I wonder if you can tell me the name of the company that is advertising here. I'll help you out a bit as well. I'll give you kind of like the storyline of each advert, just to give you a bit of context. Feel free to shout out the answer. If you don't want to shout out the answer, but you know it and you're right, then you can give yourselves a pat on the back as well. So how about this one? Here's our first one. This is Kevin the Carrot. He's off on his stag do, desperate to get back to his carrot bride, presumably before they get eaten for Christmas. Anyone know who this is? Shout out, just shout out. Don't feel... Aldi, that's right. Well done. Aldi, that's one. The next one. How about this one? Dawn French struck in a traffic jam when her fairy, who looks weirdly just like her, opens the back of a lorry and everyone has a party eating Tom Kerridge food. Who knows who this is? M&S, well done. You know your adverts. How about this one? Christmas isn't perfect, but that's why we love it. Granddad has an opinion. Two brothers fall out over a game of Pictionary, trying to draw what is supposed to be a biscuit. And a teenager tries to wrap a present in an entire roll of sellotape without breaking it or cutting it with scissors. Who's this? Anyone know? No. Might have flummoxed you. This is Tesco. This was Tesco's, this year's Tesco advert. Now, how about this one? A teenager buys his dad a vinyl album of a 90s dance classic, and they have a kind of slightly awkward hug at the end. Who knows what this might be for? John Lewis, well done. That one's got you. Tesco's has failed so far in their Christmas adverts. How about this one? Joe Wilkinson. Now, for some weird reason, he's called Phil, and he bumps into Keira Knightley in a supermarket. There's a clue. And at the end, they kind of end up in a kind of Love Actually-style romance. Who's this? Waitrose, yeah, I left the W on there as well. That was another clue. So there we go. You all know your Christmas ads, apart from Tesco's. So Christmas ads are obviously all designed to get you to buy more food or to buy more stuff. And some are just really direct, aren't they? You know, buy your Christmas food from us. Well, if you don't buy your Christmas food from us, your Christmas will probably be rubbish. And some of them are just more subtle, aren't they? They still very much want you to buy their stuff, but they go for your heartstrings first. They take a sort of roundabout route, hoping that there'll be some kind of emotional connection that you form with their brand, so that for some reason you'll start shopping at Waitrose this year rather than Tesco's or whatever it is. Advertisers just love to play with our emotions, and I think they especially like to play on our longing to be connected to other people. Whether that's the boy and his dad having the kind of manly hug, or Phil getting together with Keira Knightley, there's a deep sense of longing. And if you go back through, actually, you go back through the Christmas ads over previous years, and you can do that on YouTube if you like. Basically, you see loads of the same stuff. Christmas is a nice time to eat lots of food, but there's also a ton of longing to belong in tons of Christmas adverts if you go back. And that got me thinking. We look forward to Christmas, don't we? Most of us do anyway. So it's so nice to share presents. It's nice to be together when the weather outside is rubbish. But in the history of the church, actually, Christmas has traditionally been called Advent. Basically, a time of waiting for someone important to arrive. And if you're like me, waiting is the least fun thing in the world to do. Children, I wonder whether you like waiting for Christmas Day as much as you like opening your presents on Christmas Day. I bet you don't. I bet you hate the waiting. If you're like our children anyway, you'd much rather be opening your presents than waiting to open them. Waiting is often painful, it's often uncomfortable, and waiting often involves a feeling of longing, doesn't it? Longing that the thing we're waiting for would come, that our circumstances would change. For some of you here this afternoon, Christmas may be a reminder that you're longing for things to be different in life, longing that something would change in your family or with a loved one, longing your health would improve, or longing that you'd find someone to share your life with. They're painful longings, all of them. It may not be waiting for something to happen in the future. It may be something that will never happen, a longing to spend Christmas with somebody you love who's died and is no longer here. A longing to be together as a family, and that's just not possible because of a divorce. Or maybe it's a kind of nostalgic longing. You're a bit older, you long for the Christmases that you had when you were a child. Or maybe your children, you've got children, they've all grown up, and you'd long for a time when, for them, Christmas was an exciting time. You long to be back then. Christmas can be a time of longing in lots and lots of different ways. Now, this may seem like a pretty miserable thing to talk about at Christmas. I don't want to be a kind of Debbie Downer as we have our Christmas talk, and we're definitely not going to end here, so be assured. But maybe the Christmas story only really makes sense if you are longing for something. The Christmas story maybe only makes sense if you're longing for something. If you're not, then it's just a nice story about a cute baby in a manger, and who doesn't love a story about a baby? The Bible, actually, you could describe it as a book full of people longing for something. And that's true of the Christmas story as well. We had a reading a few moments ago from Enoch about a man called Simeon. I've got the passage here. I can put it up on the screen. Ah, there we go. It's a bit small, so you might have to squint. Christmas, as we just said, has been traditionally been a time of waiting in the church calendar. And that's the case for this old man called Simeon. The passage says that he was waiting for the consolation of Israel, which is another way of saying that he was longing for God to show up and to do something. To many of God's people at this time, they thought God had left them, God had forgotten them. You know, no prophet for 400 years had spoken. Israel's now a weak nation. Israel's now an occupied nation, occupied by the cruel Romans. All looked hopeless, and Simeon longed for things to be different. And there's no doubt that the longing that he felt was also painful. And now he was old. All the longings that he had looked like they would remain unfulfilled. And it's at this point that he gets to hold the promised Messiah. As Jesus is brought into the temple, something supernatural is going on, and the passage tells us that the Holy Spirit has spoken to him and promised him that he would see the Messiah. And here he is, an old man holding the child who would become the consolation for Israel. In the middle of all of the pain of waiting for Simeon, that's when he now gets this sense, enormous sense of peace. And that's my point, really, this afternoon, just the one point, really, of this talk. It's in the middle of the pain of his longing, Simeon's longing, that God comes to this old man. And it's in the middle of the pain of our longings that he can come to you too. This is the heart of the Christmas story, really. But as Jesus comes to us in our longings, it's not always a comfortable thing. Not initially, at least. The text says that when Jesus comes, it's so that, right at the bottom of the screen there, the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. That's why he comes. It's only when we admit, actually, that we're longing for something that can never, ever be fulfilled by anything this life has to offer, that God can do anything. If we fight to keep on the masks that we use to hide all of our longings, then the Christmas story is just a nice story, and that's all it'll stay. It's only when we admit that we're longing for so many things that may never be fulfilled, that's perhaps the moment where Jesus feels like he might be an option for us. Now, at this point, you might be thinking that you're not religious at all, and you aren't interested in any of this stuff about Jesus and the Holy Spirit and angels and all of that. But I wonder if I could ask you a few questions this afternoon. Maybe there's a different place to start. Do you have a deep sense of longing? Is there a pain in your life that no matter what you do or what you try to do, just won't go away? In no way is the Christian faith, by the way, a cure for all your problems. That's definitely not what we're saying this afternoon. But it is a consolation in the middle of all of our longings. If you're going through a rough time and life is really hard, you may think you've just got too much on your mind to think about any of this stuff to do with Jesus. But what if this was just the right time to look into this story? Now, even if there's a tiny bit of you that finds this appealing, but maybe the other side of you is kind of battling against it, you're kind of saying, none of this can possibly be true. I want to ask you another question. What if there was a chance that all of this was true? The writer C.S. Lewis, he wrote all the Narnia books, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and all the others. He also wrote a load of books about the Christian faith. In fact, he himself was a really big skeptic of Christianity until he was in his early 30s when he became a Christian. And he said this: if we find ourselves with a desire or a longing that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we were made for another world. If we find ourselves with a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we were made for another world. What if there's a chance that all the longings we have in this life are a sign that there is more to this life than we can see or we can understand? Now, if you're even remotely interested in any of this, you're not alone. The Bible Society, who did the video earlier, they've been around for a few hundred years. They recently did a survey in the UK from 2018 to 2025 looking at church attendance and general interest in Christianity. The report's online. And the report's called The Quiet Revival. Now, all they mean by that is a revival of interest in Christianity is going on between 2018 and 2025. And they call it a quiet revival because, in their own words, it's low-key but widespread. And they gave these stats. They basically asked, do you attend church at least once a month? And this is what they came up with, or what came back when they did the survey. And it shows that church attendance between 2018 and 2025 has actually grown by 50%. And it's grown the most in the under 35s, amongst the youngest. They call that the spiritual generation, because there's a general rise in interest in all sorts of spiritual beliefs right across the board. But there's a real rise in church attendance in the middle of all of that. Now, church attendance might not have been that high to start with, of course. But there is something in these numbers. We have no idea really why, because they're just statistics. But there's definitely an increase in people wanting to find out more. But maybe the chance that all of this might be true is reason enough. Maybe that's why people are turning and looking at things like Christianity as an answer to all of their longings. This is where I'm going to finish. It's got one more slide, if I can get to it. If any of this stuff is even remotely interesting, then why not do the simple things first? Why not read the Bible for yourself? Don't start with Genesis at the beginning. The Bible is one of those books that perhaps it's not best to start at the beginning. Perhaps it's best to start in the middle, or perhaps slightly after the middle, in one of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke or John, and just read about Jesus for yourself. We've got some copies, actually, on the back table by the mince pies and the tea and coffee of Luke's gospel. You can take one for free. They're freely available. Take one. And why not read it all the way through and find out for yourself who Jesus really is? Or read one of the other gospels, Matthew or Mark or John. And why not maybe consider coming to church? That might sound like a weird thing to even suggest, and it may be weird to come, probably will be. But why not come along? Maybe, if not to this church, to another church you're recommended to by a friend, and find out for yourself what Christianity is all about. If you're longing for something and there's pain in your longing, but there may be even in your mind a chance that all of this Christianity stuff might be true, what do you have to lose than finding out some more? Thanks for listening. It's been great to have you with us again at our carol service. We're going to sing our final carol now, O Come All Ye Faithful.